Today is Wednesday, September 4th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Coming up, Hong Kong's Carrie Lam officially withdraws the controversial extradition bill that has sparked months of protests. And the latest on Hurricane Dorian.
Dorian to continue to move very close, dangerously close to the coastline here over the next few days.
Also ahead, Britain's opposition MPs look to prevent Prime Minister Boris Johnson from crashing out of the EU. Those stories and more are all coming up next. In Hong Kong, Chief Executive Carrie Lam withdrew the proposed legislation to allow extradition to mainland China. The bill had sparked 3 months of nearly daily protests by hundreds of thousands of Hong Kong citizens concerned that it would further erode their rights. Since then, the protesters have demanded that Lam resign, which she has said she will not do, and are calling for an investigation into what they consider abusive police tactics and blocking protests. Justin Solomon is a journalist in Hong Kong who has been covering this protest for weeks. He spoke with my colleague Kate Pound-Dawson about today's developments.
So in a surprise move, the chief executive of Hong Kong's leader, Carrie Lam, addressed the citizens of Hong Kong in a taped message. It was about 6 minutes long, a videotaped message. And the big news out of that, the government will officially withdraw the highly controversial extradition bill. In the video, she acknowledged the months of political unrest and violence and disruption to society. And the fact that these protests have grown far greater than just being about the extradition bill. Of course, that was a law that would have allowed the extradition of suspects to mainland China.
Now, what else did she say in her statement?
Carrie Lam announced the bill, which in June she called dead, would be officially withdrawn. And that, of course, was one of the five key demands made by the protesters. She also talked about the other four demands, but glossed over them, really. Instead, she laid out her own four actions for moving Hong Kong forward and out of this current situation. She laid out these four actions, and she wants to go out to the communities and start a direct dialogue. And now that's something she's talked about over the past few weeks, and we haven't seen happen yet. She's also said in this message that she will look to community leaders and academics to review what she calls deep-seated problems in society, and then ask these leaders to advise the government on finding ways out.
What's the reaction been so far among the protesters?
Well, the reaction, as I think most could assume, has been this is a too little, too late situation. Joshua Wong, the architect for the Umbrella Movement, which was 5 years ago, took to Twitter and called Carrie Lam's announcement completely out of touch. So online, there's already talk of more protests, more rallies, and I think it's safe to say that these protests aren't going to end because of her announcement today.
What are the next steps? What's expected to come in the next few weeks, particularly as we move toward China's National Day on October 1st?
Well, China's National Day and also the five-year anniversary of the Umbrella Movement is coming up at the end of September, which we're expecting to see more protests in association with that, more in support of it. But what we're hearing is there will be more calls to action at the airport again, more calls for rallies, more protests. There's nothing firm at this point, but as soon as this announcement came out this evening, Hong Kong time, there were calls on social media forums for the next rally, some as soon as Friday of this week.
And that was Justin Solomon in Hong Kong. As Hurricane Dorian approaches the United States, the storm smashed parts of the tourism-dependent Bahamas to ruins, leaving relief officials scrambling on Tuesday to battle an unfolding humanitarian crisis as the scale of the catastrophe begins to emerge. Reuters' Ryan Brooks has that part of the story.
This is Marsh Harbor. Hurricane Dorian has left parts of the Bahamas in utter devastation. A after 3 days of pummeling the islands.
That's the man.
On Tuesday, some of the first glimpses of the ruins of Great Abaco Island emerged, showing mile on mile of flooded streets, shredded buildings, and shipping containers thrown in every direction like toys. What appeared to be the island's airstrip was almost completely underwater. Still, the full scale of the disaster may not come into focus until the storm passes. A number of deaths have been confirmed, but authorities say they expect the toll to rise. Messages on Twitter described whole communities being swept away. Bahamas Prime Minister Hubert Minnis has called it a historic crisis, but said he's confident his nation can recover from the catastrophe.
Just in case you don't know, Bahamians, especially Abaconians, are very resilient. They've gone through this before, and I've seen them rebuild themselves in a matter of time.
The Red Cross says they expect a complicated relief effort. Volunteers in the capital, Nassau, were sorting donations on Tuesday before they head to the ruins.
They need every piece of help they can get. It is totally, it's devastating, it's heartbreaking when you look and see the initial videos that are coming out of there. And so we know from what we've been seeing and hearing that this one will require the help of all persons.
The Red Cross and Red Crescent say as many as 13,000 homes across the Bahamas have been damaged or destroyed. Dorian has been downgraded to a Category 2 hurricane, but it's grown in size and speed, and forecasters warn it will come dangerously close to Florida. The storm has sparked evacuation orders for more than 1 million residents on the U.S. East Coast until the storm dies down.
That was Reuters reporter Ryan Brooks. The United States has also announced it is sending aid to the Bahamas. Ken Graham is at the U.S. National Hurricane Center and has the latest on the storm's forecast.
You can still see the center portion of it there, some of that intense convection rotating around the center, but still the coast being battered by the winds and the waves, and also these outer bands that are producing gusty winds and a lot of rainfall. The latest forecast that we have still continuing to move up towards the north, right now moving north-northwest at 9 miles an hour. Winds are still 105 miles an hour, so still a very powerful hurricane. You can see how far the tropical storm force winds stretch out from the center. Just a very large area of those tropical storm force winds, so the danger of the wind there, and also the hurricane force wind stretching out 60 miles or so from the center. So that's why we have hurricane warnings up. So if we march towards the coast of South Carolina and North Carolina, look how close that center gets to the coastline. And as a result, we've updated the warnings to have a hurricane warning for the North Carolina coast and the South Carolina coast, and a tropical storm warning Georgia coast down through portions of Florida. So a very dangerous situation as well, and it's not just the winds that we're looking at here, it's also the water. We keep talking about the dangers of the water. 90% of the fatalities in tropical systems is the water. The Weather Prediction Center coming up with these very dangerous areas. Any one of these areas, portions of Florida, the extreme northern part of the Florida coast into Georgia, South Carolina, and North Carolina, not just on the coast, but inland as well. These are areas with the highest risk of that flash flooding. So it's a very dangerous situation when it comes to the rainfall. And please remember, this is over the next 3 days. You know, you never drive your car where water covers the road. Turn around, don't drown. Just an important reminder as we start seeing these heavy rains. Speaking of those heavy rains, this is what we're looking at for values. At 6 to 10 inches of rain concentrated through the North Carolina, off South Carolina, and a portion of the Georgia coast here too. So that's just an incredible amount of rain, very dangerous amount of rain over the next few days. And also 10 to 15 just off the coast. But remember that rain's right along the track and to the right of the track. So if we get a little bit of movement of that track to the left, some of those values could stretch inland, further inland. So we got to remember that through the time. Storm surge is something we've been talking about, the leading cause of fatalities in tropical systems. And some of this water could come in well before the center of the storm. Some of the values that we have, the South Carolina coast, 4 to 7 foot of storm surge, 5 to 8 for portions of South Carolina, North Carolina, all the way up. We see that in the Outer Banks or so. Not just those barrier islands, but you can see some of these values stretch inland, especially in the rivers. You can get miles inland.
And that was Ken Graham at the U.S. National Hurricane Center. Among other top stories in the world, the chairman of Hong Kong's flagship Cathay Pacific Airlines has stepped down, becoming the second executive to resign under pressure from China since pro-democracy demonstrations erupted in June. China has filed a lawsuit with the World Trade Organization after the U.S. on Sunday began to impose 15% tariffs on the first batch of U.S. $300 billion worth of Chinese imports. Southern California rescue workers say they have recovered the bodies of 20 people killed in a middle-of-the-night fire aboard a dive boat while continuing to look for 14 additional people feared dead. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our mobile app. This is VOA News.
Had a tough week? Well, this Sunday, let the sweet sound of African music restore and revive you. Hi, everyone. I'm Heather Maxwell. Inside this weekend's edition of Music Time in Africa, vibe to the grooves of Mozambique and Ghana. I just came back from Maputo and am bringing you music from artists I met like Mingush, Machumezango, Lena Baul, Dilon Jinj, and more. From Ghana, my special guest E.L. joins me in the studio along with Kwame Ofori all hour long.
Hello, people. What's up?
So tune in this Sunday and the following Saturday at 15:05 and 20:05 Universal Time. Music Time in Africa.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. Britain's parliament faced a second straight day of political turmoil as lawmakers fought Prime Minister Boris Johnson's plan to deliver Brexit in less than 2 months, come what may.
This government is going to get a deal from our friends in Brussels. And we will get the backstop out. We will get an agreement that I think this House can approve. The only thing that's standing in our way is the undermining of those negotiations by this surrender bill, which would lead to more dither and delay.
Johnson has threatened to dissolve the House of Commons and hold a national election in what he hopes to produce a less fractious crop of legislatures. The House of Commons voted 329 to 300 in favor of the bill, setting the stage for another vote later in the day. And to get the full rundown of what we can expect in the hours to come, on the phone is from London, Henry Ridgewell, who's been covering the story for VOA. Henry, thank you for joining us.
Great to be with you.
So where exactly do things stand now that this first vote has taken place?
Well, at the moment, we're in the midst of a very complex parliamentary process in Britain, which has this very famously complex parliamentary system. As you say, the government lost this vote that was put forward by opposition MPs. So this law that would prevent Britain from crashing out of the European Union with no deal on the 31st of October has passed its first hurdle. There are several more that it still has to pass before it becomes law. So it's going to have another vote in the House of Commons with the elected MPs later tonight, but it's also got to be approved by the House of Lords, the upper chamber of the British Parliament, at some point before Friday this week. And there are members of the House of Lords who are very vehemently opposed to this attempt to pass a law in this manner and will try to filibuster or try to talk out this law so that it can't get on the statute book. So MPs and other lords who like this motion have actually tried different mechanisms, something that's called a guillotine motion, which would try to prevent filibuster of this law so that it may become on the statute book, so that it will be presented to the government at some point early next week. And then, according to parliamentary convention, Boris Johnson would have to go to the Queen and say, well, you have to sign this. This has been passed by the House of Commons and the House of Lords, and this should become law. But there's a slight question mark over whether Prime Minister Boris Johnson would follow that convention or whether he might just flatly refuse to ask the Queen to sign it into law, or indeed whether he might refuse to follow the orders on the statute book, which say you must now go to Brussels and ask for an extension to the Brexit process. He has said he will not do that under any circumstances. If he does refuse, then we are in complete political no man's land. We don't have a written constitution in Britain, so nobody really knows what would happen next. Presumably there would be court cases against the Prime Minister and the government. The House of Commons would probably try to pass a vote of no confidence in Boris Johnson and try to install a new government. So a couple of days of parliamentary fun and games here, but we're very much only at the beginning. There's plenty more to come.
Really quickly, how are people in general reacting to this, what some are calling Brexit fatigue at this point with this ongoing drama?
Well, exactly that. A lot of people are sick and tired of it and want to get some kind of solution. But you're also seeing on either end a polarization of thought for those who want to stay in the European Union. They will only campaign for remaining and revocation of the entire process. And on the other end, for the Brexit supporters, they just want a no-deal Brexit. They want to crash out, and they want what they say is a clean break. Most experts say that would cause a lot of political and economic chaos in Britain.
Henry Ridgewell is in London. Thank you so much for joining us.
Good to be with you.
Google has settled a U.S. Federal Trade Commission case over allegations it collected children's personal information without their parents' consent. The AP's Mike Gracia has that story.
Google will pony up a total of $170 million to settle allegations its YouTube site collected information of children under age of 13 without parental consent in violation of federal law. The bulk of the settlement, $136 million, will be paid to the Federal Trade Commission, amounting to the largest fine ever by the FTC on Google. Google will also pay $34 million to New York State. FTC commissioners voted 3-2 to approve the settlement. Chairman Joe Simons and two other Republicans approved the terms. The two Democrats voted against. Mike Gracia, Washington.
For the first time, the United States has imposed sanctions against Iran's space agency, saying its space launch technology is virtually identical with that used in ballistic missiles. The sanctions block the assets of the Iran Space Agency, the Iran Space Research Center, and the Aeronautics Research Institute. Iran says its space program is building rockets to launch telecommunications satellites. Under a 2015 international agreement that limited Iran's nuclear program, Tehran was called on to drop activity related to ballistic missiles that could be used to deliver nuclear weapons. The U.S. has withdrawn from that deal and wants to reopen talks. Iranian President Hassan Rouhani said the only way his government would meet with Washington is if all U.S. sanctions are dropped and the other parties to the 2015 deal are present. However, Rouhani also gave European powers another 2 months to save the deal today, but warned that Tehran is still preparing for further significant breaches of the agreement if diplomatic efforts fail. Reuters' Emily Wither takes things from here.
Iran issuing new threats over the 2015 nuclear deal. The country's president, Hassan Rouhani.
This third step might not appear very dramatic, but it is, at heart, extremely significant. I think the third step will be the most important step we will take, the effects of which will be extraordinary.
His statement comes as Iranian officials appeared to give a guarded welcome to a French proposal to save the automatic pact in return for $15 billion in credit lines until the end of the year. The condition is that Tehran must come fully back into compliance. Rouhani said talks with European powers were moving forward. It's been a downward spiral since the US pulled out of the deal, struck with world powers in 2015. Iran promised to curb its nuclear development program in exchange for sanctions relief. Fast forward, and Iran is breaching terms of the deal while facing crippling US sanctions. Iran had threatened to take further measures unless France and the other European signatories of the pact did more to protect Iran from the impact of the U.S. penalties. The country's vital crude oil sales have plummeted by more than 80% under American restrictions. For now, the clock is still ticking.
That was Reuters reporter Emily Wither. You're listening to VOA News.
Hello. I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller. In a news release Tuesday, Chinese smartphone maker Huawei accused Washington of coercing and enticing some of its mid- to high-level employees and partners into becoming informants for them, along with many other allegations. Reuters' Jason Albano has that story.
Huawei on Tuesday accused the U.S. government of instructing law enforcement to, quote, coerce and entice its employees in a bid to turn them against the company. The world's number two smartphone maker said Washington was using its judicial and administrative powers to disrupt its business amid a trade war with China. That came from an undated document seen by Reuters and from a Tuesday news release by the company. In it, Huawei said some of its staff and Huawei partners, all mid- to high-level executives, were subjected to unlawful searches, detention, and arrest. Others were visited by FBI agents at their homes and pressured to collect information from the company. Huawei did not provide any evidence of its accusations, and Reuters could not independently confirm the information provided by Huawei. The Justice Department said the FBI would not have a separate comment. In Tuesday's news release, Huawei also described a spate of other allegations against the U.S. government, including cyber attacks, mobilizing other companies to level baseless accusations against Huawei, and filing criminal charges based on claims of technology theft. However, the document did not provide specific details about any of the claims.
And that was Reuters reporter Jason Albano. With anti-immigrant violence sweeping parts of South Africa, Nigeria on Wednesday urged its citizens to refrain from vengeance, even as at least two major South African-owned companies have suspended some operations there because of attacks. But days of looting and attacks on South African businesses believed owned by foreigners have had a ripple effect. The South African grocery chain Shoprite Holdings said some of its stores operating in its domestic market, as well as in Nigeria and Zambia, have closed following the attacks. And the South African telecom operator MTN shuttered stores in Nigeria following attacks in several cities there, citing safety concerns for customers and staff. South African police have reported at least five people killed and more than 110 have been arrested amid rioting and protests against the employment of foreigners. Highways have also been blocked and vehicles bombed with petrol. South African President Cyril Ramaphosa has urged the country's residents to stop attacking foreigners and vandalizing businesses. With attacks continuing, the presidents of Rwanda, Malawi, and the Democratic Republic of Congo have said they will not attend the World Economic Forum on Africa. The event in Cape Town opened Wednesday and continues through Friday. And taking a quick look back in time, it was on this day in 1988 that internet services company Google filed for incorporation in California. And in 1972, The New Price is Right, hosted by Bob Barker, premiered on CBS. The game show later dropped the new from its title and expanded from a half hour to 1 hour. And Barker remained the host and was one of the longest running television game show hosts until he retired in 2007. And in 2006, crocodile hunter Steve Irwin died at the age of 44 after a stingray's barb pierced his chest. And with that, that's going to do it for us today. Go ahead and thank our producer, Nadia Taha, engineer Rob McLean, and Kate Pound Dawson, our managing editor, for helping put the show together. But most importantly, thank you for listening. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Make it a great day.